This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Haney. Coming up on today's show, we'll talk with the author of The Book of Joy, which highlights a remarkable birthday celebration between the Dalai Lama and Archbishop Desmond Tutu, and a conversation with the founder of a local bakery that helps promote mental health awareness. First up, Kentucky Senate Bill 120 has been approved by both the Kentucky House and Senate and seems likely to move out of the General Assembly and onto Governor Matt Bevin's desk for his signature. If signed into law, the legislation would bring major reforms to the Kentucky criminal justice system. Joining us to discuss details of Senate Bill 120 and what changes it would bring to the criminal justice system in the state is Holly Harris, Executive Director of the U.S. Justice Action Network. The organization is a strong supporter of the legislation. You can be part of the conversation, 513-419-7100, email talk at wvxu.org, or find us on Facebook or Twitter. Holly, good afternoon, and thank you for joining me.
Well, thank you so much for having me. Cincinnati is actually very close to my home state, so it's like I'm talking to my hometown.
That's right. You're from Kentucky.
I am indeed. Was born and raised in Elizabethtown, but spent most of my life in Lexington.
Yeah. Holly, let's talk about this criminal justice reform bill that's making its way through the General Assembly. How sweeping of a bill is this?
Well, it's a really great first step bill that was born out of Governor Bevin's task force. It was called the Criminal Justice Policy Assessment Council. The council was made up of very diverse voices, and the first bill that was born out of that group was Senate Bill 120, which we would refer to as a reentry bill. So it breaks down barriers for the formerly incarcerated so that they can find jobs, support their families, and lead crime-free lives. Most notably, the bill removes government restrictions on licensing for certain jobs so that returning citizens have a pathway to employment. Let's just take the construction business, for example. In Kentucky, you have to secure a license, which is basically a government-issued permission slip to be an HVAC technician, a radon inspector, a land surveyor, and more. And right now, a person with a criminal record is often barred from obtaining such a license. And this bill would eliminate the automatic government prohibition and replace it with a system that really puts these decisions in the hands of the licensing board, which is made up, of course, of individuals who are deeply involved in the industry. So in other words, it gets government out of the way and will hopefully put more people back to work.
Holly, any idea how many jobs in Kentucky require some type of professional or occupational licensing?
Yeah, it's about 20% now, which is a dramatic increase over what it's been in the past. Just consider that now for, about 20% of occupations, you now have to get permission from the government in order to, engage in that profession. And it really stifles entrepreneurship. And, Kentucky right now is 47th in workforce participation. And our hope is that this bill, which, yes, it's a criminal justice reform bill, but it's also very much a jobs bill. And so our hope, obviously, is that this will put people back to work, help them turn away from crime, and ultimately make society safer.
So a lot of this deals with reentry. What are some of the other elements of this bill?
So the bill also cause of much criminal activity, which is drug addiction. It creates a pilot program to provide more drug treatment and more intensive supervision for individuals who are on parole, which is critical because Kentucky, of course, like Ohio, finds itself submerged in the heroin and opioid epidemic and in, prescription pill abuse. And, if we aren't treating the root of the evil, then we're simply going to be returning better criminals to society rather than better citizens. And, Ohio has actually done some great reentry programming. I believe the governor signed some reforms. This is, I think, back in 2009. And it took Ohio's recidivism rate from 40%. To roughly 27% today. And currently, Kentucky's recidivism rate sits at 40%. And our hope is that, Kentucky can sort of follow the lead of Ohio and implement these reforms and see a really positive public safety return, in the next few years.
Now, you were talking about dealing with drug addiction and the heroin epidemic in the state. Is that where the Angel Initiative comes in this legislation?
Sure. Yeah. And again, this legislation, it's a pilot program that will, you know, open up opportunities for more treatment. But, you know, Kentucky really needs to go further with its reforms. This is a great first step. But again, states like Ohio, Georgia, Texas, South Carolina, a lot of these states have already moved forward with reentry reforms. So Kentucky is a bit behind. But, you know, our hope is that this committee that the governor has put together will move forward next year with pretrial reforms, with potentially, you know, lowering the felony theft threshold. You know, it's really kind of shocking now. You know, you steal a cell phone and you can end up with a felony record, which will haunt you the rest of your life. It will make it difficult for you to find a job, to improve your education, to get affordable housing. And what happens when these, you know, when individuals who've made these mistakes, what happens when they can't find jobs and support themselves and their families, you know, they return to crime, you know, often in a more violent way. And we as society, you know, we're no safer.
Now, who's supporting this bill, Holly?
Well, that's really the great story of Kentucky, in my opinion. I mean, at the end of the day, there were roughly 18 organizations that were supporting the legislation, including two of the state's most prominent victims groups, the Kentucky Chamber of Commerce, so you had a business voice there, the Kentucky League of Cities, police chiefs, jailers, sheriffs, the law enforcement was strongly represented, the Catholic Conference, the faith-based community, and the ACLU of Kentucky. So you had, you know, some very conservative voices and some very progressive voices. And so the supporters of this legislation really sort of spanned the ideological spectrum, which underscores the broad bipartisan support that criminal justice reform has in this country.
I was going to ask you, how common is that type of bipartisan support for criminal justice reform bills? Does this seem to be an area that Democrats and Republicans, conservatives and liberals that can seem to, it seems like they can agree on this?
Shockingly enough, it really is, you know, something all across the country and even in Washington, D.C., which is where I live now, actually looking at our Capitol as we speak, you know, even here in Washington, you have, you know, folks like Senator Mike Lee, who's an incredibly, you know, conservative senator from Utah, who's a strong proponent of criminal justice reform, Senator John Cornyn of Texas. And then across the aisle, you know, these reforms are supported by our former president, Barack Obama. And so, you know, this is the one area, the one policy area in this country where we continue to see both incredibly conservative and progressive voices joining together. Now, sometimes they have different reasons for supporting this legislation. You know, a lot of the progressive groups are very concerned about civil rights issues and the racial disparities that are existing in our criminal justice system right now. And then, of course, you know, a lot of our conservative groups are deeply concerned about government overreach and about holding government accountable and about, you know, ensuring that our taxpayer dollars are spent wisely and that we're getting the public safety return that we deserve. So even though these groups may have different perspectives, they've all arrived at the same conclusion, which is that we have to start implementing policies that safely reduce the prison population and allow for second chances for those who've earned it.
This bill passed in the Kentucky House and Senate. I think there were only 10 votes against it in both. Are there any organizations out there that are against the bill?
You know, it's really interesting. Even though the margin was just really overwhelming, you know, I don't think that's indicative of the challenges that existed behind the scenes. You know, I actually want to take some of the blame for that. You know, we talk a lot about second chances in the reform movement, but I don't think we've done enough to talk about the public safety impact of these reforms. And, you know, there were a few individuals who, you know, had been impacted by crime or whose family members had been victims of crime who had some concerns about the legislation and that they really felt like, you know, that these reforms were putting an emphasis on, you know, helping criminals rather than helping victims. And that's our fault. We need to be talking about how these reforms have led to lower crime rates and lower recidivism rates in other states, you know, including Ohio, which, of course, lowered its recidivism rate by more than 10%. And that obviously means fewer victims. So, you know, moving forward, you know, our lead with respect to, you know, moving these reforms in state legislatures is going to be public safety impact. Second chances is, you know, that's something that many people feel very passionately about, but the greater society benefit is the public safety impact.
They feel passionately about it. Is there a lot of, but is there a lot of statistical data? You're talking about Ohio's recidivism rate and how much it's dropped. Have we kept track of that? And is there a lot data that points out that, yeah, this really does work?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, states that I would point to would be Texas, Georgia, South Carolina. And, you know, to be fair, I'll list the blue state, you know, Connecticut. Governor Malloy's done some great things there. But I'll use Texas as an example. You know, roughly a decade ago, Texas, under the leadership of Governor Perry, who's, you know, in many circles considered sort of the godfather of criminal justice reform, you know, they were faced with adding, you know, 15,000 prisoners and 15,000 new prison beds, building new prisons in Texas, or looking at alternatives to incarceration for low-level nonviolent offenders. And the legislature chose the latter route, and they were able to safely reduce the prison population, saving the taxpayers of Texas roughly $2 billion, that's billion with a B, dollars. And Texas now has its lowest crime rate since 1969. So, you know, we have those types of results all across the country. And of course, you know, our goal and our mission is to educate the public. And of course, you know, educate legislators. I'll tell you, we don't have to do a lot of education with the public, you know, in states like Kentucky and Ohio. And, you know, our polling bears that out because, you know, so many families have now been impacted by our criminal justice system, by drugs, by, you know, almost everyone knows a friend or family member who's gone to prison or, you know, who's been swept up in the drug epidemic. You know, one in three American adults now has a criminal record, which is so shocking. And so, you know, I really feel like that's the driving force behind reform is that, you know, so many of these people, you know, they don't want to throw in the towel on their friends and their family members. They want them to get treatment. They want them to be rehabilitated. They want them to successfully reenter society. And quite frankly, again, that benefits all of us when these individuals are able to return to society successfully and turn away from crime.
And we will continue our conversation. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Haney. Joining us to discuss Kentucky's criminal justice reform bill and the changes it would bring to the criminal justice system in the state is Holly Harris, Executive Director of the U.S. Justice Action Network. You can join us at 513-419-7100. And Ben in Cincinnati joins us now. Hi, Ben.
Hey, how are you guys?
Good, thank you.
Yeah, so I just had a quick question. I'm actually really love the idea of these reforms, at least to a degree. I saw, I guess, a lot of the downside of what happens with the felonies, how it just creates this domino effect of them not being able to get jobs, etc. The only other thing that I had a question on is earlier your guest mentioned that, you know, we want to kind of pull back some of these licenses for some of these industries. And so my question is, I work as a chimney sweep, and we deal a lot with a lot of different industries, and the chimney sweep industry is unregulated for the most part. I see a ton of problems, major health concerns, major safety concerns, both in the industries that I work with and both in our industry. My concern is that pulling these licenses back could cause, you know, some major public safety concerns. And so even though I'm for a lot of these regulations, how do you think that's going to affect, you know, pulling these licenses back? How do you think we can still keep oversight in those areas?
Okay. Thank you, Ben. And Holly, this is not doing away with licensing, right? This is just changing accessibility.
Yeah, sure. And thank you, Ben, for allowing me an opportunity to clarify that, because, again, that's a common misperception. But basically what Senate Bill 120 does is it takes away or eliminates the automatic government prohibition of these individuals who committed misdemeanors and felonies, the prohibition of them being able to obtain such a license, and puts discretion in the hands of the licensing board. So, for example, if an individual you know, who's made a mistake, you know, who comes before a licensing board and can show efforts at rehabilitation, job training, you know, treatment, you know, just generally show that, he or she is very serious about, you know, turning his or her life around, then obviously the licensing board can take that into consideration when making a determination. So we're not doing away with any sort of regulatory oversight. We're just ensuring that these decisions are put in the hands of the individuals, really, who should be speaking on behalf of the industries, and that's the licensing boards.
Holly, I think you referred to this bill as an entry level step in the right direction type thing. Is that, did I hear you correctly?
Sure. Earlier? It's a good first step for the committee that the governor put together.
Where do you see things headed next for criminal justice reform in Kentucky then?
Well, I'll tell you, you know, I had mentioned to you, you know, how shocking it is these days that, you know, like a felony theft threshold would be, for example, $500. You know, think about these days, you know, what $500 will get you. That would mean that, you know, let's just say you're a young person, you do something really stupid and you steal a cell phone. Well, in many cases, that would mean, you know, if you're convicted of that offense, that you would then have a felony conviction on your record. So raising the felony theft threshold is something that, you know, I think that, you know, a lot of reformers are very interested in discussing. And then, you know, another situation that's developed in Kentucky and all over the country is, you know, right now in Kentucky every year, there's roughly 75,000 individuals who sit behind bars for roughly 100 days who've never been convicted of a crime. They've been charged with a crime, but they don't have the ability to pay their bail. And so eliminating money bail, you know, I think is something that a lot of folks are looking at. You know, obviously we want to involve law enforcement in those conversations. And the 75,000 number that I just gave you, that does not include violent offenders. Those are your low-level nonviolent offenders. And again, those individuals are sitting behind bars for, you know, 100 days and or more because they can't pay their bail. And so what happens is those individuals, you know, if you don't have the ability to go to work for 100 days while you're sitting behind bars, and again, these people have not been convicted, they've been charged but not convicted, you know, these individuals very often lose their jobs. You know, there's the question of what happens to their children. There's a lot of collateral consequences that have to be considered. And so, you know, discussing reforms, discussing bail reforms, I think is something that Kentucky really needs to do moving forward.
Holly, we've got about 30 seconds left here. Tell me what remains yet? What has to happen before this bill actually becomes law? And how likely is this all to happen?
Well, we've been assured that the bill is going to get a quick concurrence from the Senate at the end of March. And then the bill, of course, will move to the governor's desk. And given that the governor actually testified in committee on behalf of this legislation, we feel pretty comfortable that he's going to sign this bill into law. And then, you know, we'll start the hard work of moving forward with more aggressive reforms next year.
Holly, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you. And go Cats, and also go Buckeyes. I can say both, actually. My son is a big Buckeyes fan, and of course, you know, I'm a born and raised Kentucky girl.
Thanks, Holly. Holly Harris, the Executive Director of the U.S. Justice Action Network.